Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:13 p.m. And today is, and that's Pacific Summer Time, and today is October 1st. Well, there is a lot to talk about today, not least NAFTA, but I thought I would kick off with oil prices because this was by far the most emphatic move we've seen in most markets today, with Brent crude up over $2. We can lay aside for the moment all of the arguments for why oil prices should or should not be moving higher. And a lot of it has to do with bottlenecks in the USA and the fact that a number of OPEC members are in rather dire straits, and also the sanctions against Iran. But this has been a really quite a rhythmic move that we've seen in oil prices so far this year, with reactions of approximately $10. Which have been concluded with rallies of approximately $10. So the most recent of those was concluded last week. This is a significant upside follow through so far today. And the first area of potential resistance is around $90. And that's assuming that the consistency of this trend remains very much intact. But we also have to, I think, hold out the potential that oil prices could pick up pace from the rather modest advance that we've had so far this year. And I think the fact that you still have monetary conditions or perhaps liquidity conditions that are still relatively abundant, and even though the IMF downgraded their global growth forecast in here today, the reality is that the US economy is still firing on all cylinders, and Europe is doing somewhat better as well. Well, that is helping to support the oil price. Generally speaking, in the latter stages of a cyclical bull market, you anticipate that cyclicals should be doing better. And, well, we can conclude that cyclicals are doing better if we're just talking about the energy price. And last time we had a big outperformance by commodities was in 2007 and all the way through to the middle of 2008. Well, what does that tell us? It tells us that cyclicals are capable of doing very well in the latter stages of a bull market. It's generally before the interest rate is a headwind, but it's also around the time when monetary conditions are starting to tighten because economic growth has been outsized and impressive. Well, we have the outsized growth in the US economy, and that's still by far the largest economy in the world. Now, therefore, this oil price is still in a consistent trend, and a consistent trend is a trend in motion, so we give the benefit of the doubt to the upside until we see trend inconsistencies, and there's no sign of that just yet. Well, that is helping to support shares like Royal Dutch Shell, which bounced emphatically from the region of the trend mean 3 weeks ago, and it was relatively modest on the upside in here today. But then when we look at, for example, the S&P 500 energy sector, well, it's been held back by the underperformance of ExxonMobil over the course of the last couple of years, but it has rallied now back up towards the upper side of this range that's been in development for nearly 2 years. And in the absence of a clear downward dynamic, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to additional upside, provided oil prices continue to hold their move. And there's a lot of oil becomes economic at $80 and change. So that's, I think, an important factor. Then you also have the fact that the NAFTA negotiations were concluded in here today. Well, stock markets surged higher initially, but were not quite able to hold all of the advance. And part of the reason for that was because the IMF downgraded the global growth forecast. Well, the S&P 500 is approximately 6% overextended relative to the trend mean, so it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some somewhat larger consolidation. What I think is notable is that particularly since July, the pace of the advance has moderated, the amplitude of the ranges has decreased, but so has so have the breaks on the upside. And of course, the VIX index is still really quite low. and at around 12, it isn't quite yet below the 10 area, but neither is it surging higher. And we can also see that there's been this gradual declining trend of volatility since April. Generally speaking, it takes about 6 months for volatility to return to normal after a big spike on the upside, and we've seen evidence of that previously. But it's an entirely different question whether we're going to see the index push and sustain a move back below 10, because that would be a very involatile condition indeed, and is perhaps not quite justified by the markets such as they are today. But oil prices are one cyclical sector. Commodities generally are another. And when, for example, we look at the FTSE 350 mining index, then it is now pausing in the region of the trend mean. This is really the first area of potential resistance, having broken below it in over the summer. And now the question is whether it can sustain this move. Well, the Chinese market is shut this week, so it's really open to question just exactly what's going to happen with the Chinese market once it opens up again next Monday. But it's also, I think, something that Chinese investors are quite conditioned for, is a rally before the holiday and then some profit taking afterwards. So we'll see what happens next week with regard to China. But when we go back and think about the outperformance of cyclicals, then in the tech historically, the technology sector has also been considered cyclical. But the evolution of the subscription business model in technology has, I think, changed that environment. I don't think it's still appropriate to consider a company like Microsoft as being a cyclical business. If, for example, we look at it over the course of the last 20-odd years, we can see that there have been significant peak to trough swings in the range that persisted between 2000 and approximately 2013. But since then, the price has just been marching higher, and that coincided with the adoption of a subscription business model. So Microsoft is no longer a cyclical sector, but biotechnology is. And biotechnology shares did really very well last week and got right up towards their peak, but it posted a downside key reversal in here today. So that has, I think, capped the advance in the short term. But when we look at the relative performance of the biotechnology sector, particularly against the semiconductor sector, then I think there is potential for biotech to outperform. And certainly the number of shares that have been completing lengthy ranges in the biotech sector is rather supportive of that conclusion. Certainly, the commonality within the semiconductor sector is deteriorating. So on the one hand, you have Nvidia, which has been marching higher and was at another new high in here today. But then when we look at microchip technologies, it's breaking down, and that looks like a rather significant decline now and a completing top formation. So what we have evidence of is that the semiconductor sector, having been really very consistent on the upside, is starting to roll over, whereas the biotech sector does have the potential to pick up some of the running in here. And then there's also the banking sector. Banks generally tend to thrive in a liquidity-rich environment, and the S&P 500 Banks Index has rallied impressively since the presidential election. Well, it's right in the region of the trend mean right now, and this is about where we can anticipate some support starting to come back in. It really does need to bounce from the region of the trend mean to demonstrate a return to demand dominance. But I think another point that's worth considering with the S&P 500 banks is that it still hasn't, it has not broken down. It's still trending, and as long as it's still trending, then it doesn't represent a headwind to to Wall Street. However, the banking sector has been largely de-risked, and a lot of the bank lending, the lending to the high yield sector, the evolution of the leverage loans sector is happening among non-bank lenders right now. So a large number of companies have got no problem sourcing capital, and the high yield sector is and the spreads over treasuries are still very much contained, and at only 318 basis points, it's been locked at around this level for more than a year and a half. Well, this is not a situation that's going to persist indefinitely, but there's no sign that it's over just yet. In many respects, the US banks have been largely de-risked because they have had such a weight of regulatory requirements imposed upon them that taking on additional risk has been rather difficult. And that suggests that a lot of the risk now stands with private equity, with the non-bank lenders. And that's not so easy to monitor in the stock market because we're not able to do that. But what we do have, I thought this was a very interesting graphic that I saw today. It's a comparison of where the excess private debt was back in 2007 with 2016. Well, we've had massive increases in non-bank debt in China, with the rise of the shadow banking sector and the non-performing loans that have been taking place in the regional banking sector, and then the rise of P2P lending or person-to-person lending. And that now represents, this is only going to 2016. There was massive issuance of shadow banking assets in 2017. So if we're really looking at where the risk is in terms of the debt markets and with regard to over leverage, well, obviously the fact that you have substantial private equity assets that are listed, or excuse me, that are not listed, but are heavily invested in the US corporate sector, that does represent a challenge for when interest rates rise, and particularly when those leverage loans have to be serviced on a floating interest rate basis. That's certainly a risk, but it's a much larger risk for China considering the quantity of debt that has been taken out over the course of the last few years. So the Chinese market is shut, and we'll really need to see how it opens up next week to see whether the rally that we saw in the last few days before the holiday is going to be sustained. If we stick with the banking sector for a moment, then the Australia, excuse me, the Indian banking sector. I will get to Australian banks in a moment. The Indian banks were a little steadier in here today following the nationalization of IL&SF. So the RBI is taking some concrete moves to contain the potential for contagion. So the Bombay Banks Index is coming back now to test those lows put in earlier this year. And if it can bounce and hold a move above the trend mean here, well, I think that could be considered a best case scenario. Yes Bank, which had the tenure of its CEO cut, was in positive territory in here today. It has paused over just these last two sessions, but what we need to see are some consecutive days on the upside to really demonstrate that a low of at least near-term significance has been found. Well, Axis Bank, which also has a GDR listed in the UK, has had the tenure of its CEO cut, and the share was in negative territory in here today, and unwound all of the little bounce that we had on Friday. So it's still a little bit out in the wilderness here for the Indian banking sector. Kotak Mahindra Bank was also in negative territory in here today, but it did close well off its lows. So now the big question is whether we're going to see these banks sustain moves back above their respective trend means. And the Nifty index is right in the region of the trend mean. And it's being supported not so much by the banks, but by its domestic, I think, champions, and most particularly those that rely on external sources of revenue. So excuse me, Tata Consultancy would be a good example there. but at least this was some evidence in here that support is starting to come back in the region of the trend mean for the Nifty. But nonetheless, the rupee is still a source of worry, and it was weaker in here today with the dollar coming back up to test the upper side of its range. Well, the Australian banking sector now represents about 32% of the financial sector represents 32% of the ASX 200. There's been a progression of lower rally highs for the index over the course of the last 18 months, and it's coming back down to test the low that we saw put in the middle of the year. So it really does need to hold that region of the low in order to demonstrate that support building is underway. It was looking much better just 2 months ago when it was breaking back above the trend mean, but that has not been sustained. On the other hand, the performance of the resources sector has been boosted by the underperformance of the dollar, or the Aussie dollar, and it continues to bounce from the region of the trend mean. So it is performing quite a bit better than the FTSE 350 mining index, which is now right in the region of the trend mean. But the weakness of the Aussie dollar has been certainly a factor in the profitability of a number of those Australian miners. Well, the Aussie dollar now is stabilizing around this 72 cent level, but it's still a reasonably consistent downtrend, and there's been a rivetingly consistent progression of lower major rally highs. So it has got some work to do in order to really demonstrate that the dollar is back in a demand-dominated environment. And against all of this background, you have the fact that household wealth and the savings rate in Australia are trending lower, with the housing market having peaked at least for the near term, with it's been falling now for a year, but not in a particularly dynamic manner. Well, the RBA obviously does not want to raise interest rates in an environment where the vast majority of mortgages are floating rate and property prices are already starting to come back down. But what's happening in Australia is probably also a reflection of some of the pressure that's coming to bear on the Chinese economy. So considering that China is the destination for a good proportion of Australia's exports, then what happens in China is going to have a knock-on effect for the Australian markets. Well, when we look at then what's going on in the currency markets, the dollar was a little bit steadier again in here today against the euro, not in a particularly dynamic manner, but it's been stronger on consecutive days, and it is demonstrating support in the region of the trend mean against the euro. Against the pound, it was a little bit softer in here today. But a weaker euro should act as something of a tailwind to nominal prices for the European markets, but not so much today. Just up 1 point and not quite countermanding the downward dynamic that we saw on Friday. There's still a progression of lower rally highs since May on the euro stocks, and this range has a rolling over type characteristic, so it really does need to sustain a move above the trend mean to break that sequence of lower rally highs and confirm that it's back in a demand dominated environment. The Thai market is benefiting from the rebound that we've seen in the baht, and the index has steadied from the region of the trend mean. Then when we look at Indonesia, there is the possibility here that Widodo is going to take a populist route by appointing what might be considered a firebrand Islamic cleric as his running mate, and it's, I think, open to question just how well that's going to be received by the stock market. The Jakarta Composite has been ranging below the trend mean for half the year already, and it really does need to sustain a move above 6,000 to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance. The Indonesian rupiah has been reasonably stable below this 15,000 level, but certainly nothing in the way of the kinds of dynamics to support the currency that we saw back in 2015. And I think the balance of probabilities is that we're going to see some additional downside. Really do think that the prognostications that the dollar's rally was over that were being voiced 2 weeks ago are now being called into question, with the dollar index bouncing pretty emphatically from the region of the trend mean. And that is most particularly the case against the yen, with the dollar breaking up now from the range that persisted for much of the last 6 months around 110. And that is acting as a tailwind for the Japanese stock market. So the Nikkei was in additional positive territory in here today and is holding the move out to new recovery highs. So yes, there is a short-term overbought condition, but it countermanded the downward downside key reversal we saw on Thursday. And as long as the yen is still weakening, that's likely to act as a tailwind. Well, also important is that the second section has bounced from the 7,000 area, and as long as that is holding the region of the trend mean, then I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, the reality is that Japan is coming off of a valuation discount and has the potential for nominal price appreciation as a result of the currency going down, whereas Wall Street is quite expensive, and the potential for relative performance by Japan, I think, does stand out as one of the clearest conclusions from the kind of action that we're seeing in stock markets at the present moment. Well, when we take a step back, Wall Street is still trending higher. The technology sector remains quite robust, and as long as that remains the case, and the fact that we do not have an inverted yield curve, that oil prices are trending higher but not surging higher, that high yield spreads are still contained, well, what that does hold out the prospect of is that there is the potential for a melt up in stock markets, despite the fact that in the short term there's a risk of some consolidation. And that would also gel with the fact that we are in the latter stages of what is still a very persistent medium-term bull market environment. Well, the 10-year yield has been consolidating above 3%, and so far there has been a distinct absence of the kind of dynamic moves that would suggest a return to demand dominance. This represents the upper side of what is effectively a 7-year base formation. And if the yield can sustain a move up and away from this level, well, then that will conclude the what is one of the longest bull markets in history. Well, gold prices were in negative territory in here today, but they were off their low. And so far, it has paused in the lower side of this trading range, but it really does need to push back and up above the $1,200 area to demonstrate a return to demand dominance. Silver prices were quite volatile in here today, and they were down 20 at the close, but that unwound about half of the big move that we saw on Friday. So I think that there is still some hope that the precious metals have fallen about as much as they're going to, but the case has not yet been completely proven that we have a low of more than short-term significance. But considering just how low they are, I think this is an interesting sector to keep a close eye on, because they have substantial potential to rally, particularly if we start to see some of the shorts getting pressured. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.